blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Nano prajna paramita kirdaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confer my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhamma. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi savaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. honor through your death and suffering. If any of your suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Before we get started, I just wanted to let folks know that we do record the Sunday morning groups, just as a reminder. So, and it's sent out to those who participate as monthly donors. Chris?
So I was been looking at kind of the, I don't know how to describe it, like the origins of that sensation that something's wrong.
The sensation that something's wrong, that we feel in our physical body.
Yes. And because it feels, like if I were to describe it, I'd describe it as, you know, in various ways. One would be something like desperate, grabby.
Grabby?
Yeah, gravity, like, you know, survival, death is imminent, kind of. Only it doesn't, at low levels, it doesn't really feel, unless I really look closely, it doesn't really feel like it's death-oriented. But when I do, that gravity quality is like the beginning of, you know, I'm going to die. If you don't give me my attention, I'm going to die.
So if you're just kind of going along and there's this sensation there, but you're not really paying attention to it, you don't really get the impact that it actually is communicating, that death is imminent.
Yeah. It's like there's a range, and there is the when I really like the fear, you know, death is really imminent. But then there's like this lower level. Mm-hmm. See, it feels like the first noble truth: life is suffering. Uh-huh. But that's that little kernel of dissatisfaction or disease or something like that. And then something just popped in at that point, which was that what that sensation was saying was something along the lines of, come and join me. I need you to come and join me. And so I started to play with that a little bit, and it was like, if I did that, kind of joined it in its world, that so let's see, if since it's not a part of life, it has no way to meet its own needs, right? Yeah. And so if I join it, then I have no way to meet my needs, because I think I'm it, the usual takeover, right?
Right.
And then the only choice I have in that place to get my needs met is to do what it did to me, which is to get someone to join me in my world.
Okay. So seeing that that sensation that's going on is a call to join me. And yeah. It has no way, the capital it, or conditioned mind.
It is
mind,
a capital. Yeah.
Has no way to get its needs met other than, I guess you might say, through your life force, your energy,
yeah.
by joining with it.
Yeah.
And in the converse way, there's no needs for the being to get its needs met unless someone joins with it, or I don't know if that what those words aren't quite.
Yeah, that was kind of the next step, was that if I do identify with it, then since I think I'm it, then I'm in the same place that it always is, which is I can't meet those needs. And so the same strategy it uses to get me into its, to identify with it, then I'm required to go and get other people. I mean, it's kind of a seeking approval kind of a piece that I was looking at. I'm required to go get other people to join in my play.
Uh-huh. Okay, and so as I think of, if I understand what you're saying, so if the identity has a need to get other people to join with it, to...
Yeah, first it's me, and mm-hmm. then through me, others.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of it. It's just, I can see how from that place, if I'm identified, I'm required to get other people to play various roles,
mm-hmm.
or the I that I think I am, which is not, of course, the real I, to play other roles. And then life just becomes about that and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
No needs ever get met.
The image I get is like a kind of a ping pong, you know, going back and forth between, you know, being in the identity, trying to get needs met externally, and then going back to conditioning and meeting conditioning's needs, passing through center the whole time.
Yeah. So anyway, that was something I've been looking at this morning.
And the other thing that was interesting when you were talking, where I thought you were going was that the need, but I wasn't seeing it as the identity, but who's ever there having those sensations of a death is imminent, also the possibility of having the relationship with the mentor.
Well, that would certainly break the cycle.
It would break the cycle and go to this whole other place. Another option.
Well, that's great, because of course that's then I think that's what the quote in there says, that's the movement where I become that which can meet your need, instead of pretending I have no clue as to where that
which is
how
what,
that's supposed to happen. Yeah,
which I think is what that was saying, is that's how we work out our own salvation diligently.
Yeah.
That relationship with the mentor.
Right.
Good to see all of that.
Oh yeah.
Chris P. I think I saw your hands.
Well, I wanted to share especially because conditioning does not like it being recorded. Although when I'm not here, I love listening to you.
Let's face it, any reason not to, talk is works with conditioning.
There's something about how at work I record interviews sometimes, and it seems like that's to be used against someone, of course. So anyway, I just wanted to share. And what was coming up was just, but that how appreciative I am of the privileged environment here, and in spending time here. The image that popped up is that it's like a Olympic Village. because I love the Olympics, or so fun. I just always love, especially the Summer Olympics. And the athletes, a lot of times, will talk about just the great camaraderie, and just like the Olympic Village is so fun. There's people from all different countries and different sports, and but they're just training at this high level. And they have such respect for one another. And so it's sort of fun to think of these folks like that.
Awareness, practice, Olympic Village.
And
that's a great image.
And I love that we don't get social, we don't talk. Although, you know, that sounds like a fun part of, to some part, yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun, but it's so clear that that would just divide us so quickly, you separate somebody. And what also comes to mind is, like, being a kid and just being so hurt somehow of always asking, are you a boy or are you a girl? And what are you? Are you Mexican or are you Indian? Are you white or are you nothing? You know, just always, always, what are you? And it used to just hurt, and I didn't know why. And then in my teens, it was like, oh, they're just trying to put me in the box.
Right.
And that's what it seemed like. And then through awareness practice, it's just like, oh, it's so clear. It's just the conditioning, separating, dividing. Mm-hmm. And especially grateful to be here and to have spent an extended period in this this atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. I'm just really feeling a lot of gratitude this morning for the privileged environment and seeing how that it's the essential nature of conditioning to separate us and make us isolated, and how that actually is mirrored in the world at large, with people having a need to isolate and box experiences and an attempt, I would think, that to try and understand things, but, you know, which actually leads away from any kind of understanding, and in fact just leads to more isolation, more suffering. And now through awareness practice, it sounds like getting a greater picture of that, or a little more understanding about what you've encountered.
Yeah, and how conditioning is the master at putting humans in a box of nightmare, you know, it's the torture box with all the division and all the separation, and being a somebody who suffers. And what also comes to mind is several times walking towards the hall for meditation, especially when it was going to be a long sit walk.
It's a sheen, or a, yes.
Yeah. It would want to play, it would, like, this is the death march. And it was so dramatic. It's like, oh, please, you can compare this to, like, the Holocaust, or to, you know, come on. But so I don't want to get in that conversation except to say that it's maybe it's its death. It's like, you know, projecting with them, and just leave it at that.
Yeah. You think? It's a master of projecting experience through us as witnessed by the resistance to coming to a sit walk sit and most stories around it.
So yeah, just happy we're all here, training the minds and heading towards freedom.
Yeah, and how, and just what arises is just happy to be here, and just how each of us has a contribution to make to that, and how important that is, that each person contributes.
And living in freedom, not just heading towards it. No, you know, just every moment we're here, it is it. So
waking up to the freedom that is here at this moment, and not having it be something that we have to kind of strive for or look forward to in the future, but really getting to that place of seeing it right here, right now.
Right. Not going for the gold medal, but
yeah.
Hey, the treasures are all the gold, the silver, the bronze, all here.
Yeah, that's how it's different from Olympic Village, isn't it? Nice, you don't have to stand on boxes and get the gold, the silver, and the bronze, or nothing, you know, but really, that goal is present here now for all of us. Jen.
That's funny because I often think of the Olympics kind of analogy, and that came up for me recently at the very beginning of one of our sesshin afternoons, as everyone was settling down on their cushion and a couple people were sort of stretching a little bit left and right, and I had this clear image of the swimmers, you know, doing flopping their arms and it was so inspiring, you know, just kind of this, okay, we're settling into the cushion for this long period of time, and I just got such an energy boost from, and we're all going to be, we're doing it together, but we're all going to be facing our own piece of wall.
Yeah. We got a little energy boost from just seeing that, you know, the team coming together and preparing for this long period.
It's funny, too, that, I mean, I've never heard that thing about the Olympic Village, but I could certainly imagine it. And that in some ways, all of those folks are competing against one another, and yet they're not.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so it was funny because recently I was walking, I'd forgotten all about this until that last conversation, that image came through, and there's this sense of like, gosh, you look at an Olympic, I look at an Olympic athlete, could, and go, well, what are you doing? What are the chances? The chances that you're going to achieve your goal are tiny. They're tiny, especially if we start way before Olympic Village.
Right.
You know? But that's not the point. You know, because the same, at least it feels to me, that there are times where truly waking up, completely waking up, being awake in the way the Buddha was or whatever, is that going to happen for me? I don't know. But that's so not the point.
So not the point.
The point is the, in the face of that, in the face of what are the chances that I'm going to be the swimmer who stands on the thing of the gold medal, but it doesn't matter, giving everything I've got to it, even though, you know, the statistics say the chances of that happening are tiny, but it's not the point, because it feels like the giving it everything over is, that is the sport.
Really giving it 100%, and as you're talking, it's like giving it over to the heart. I mean, it's like the heart, it's like giving a heart free rein. I mean, where, how could that not be a win?
Exactly.
You know, whether or not it gets acknowledged by some kind of external standard or not, but there's no other life.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
You know?
Truly. Instead of sort of, well, I'm probably not going to get that, so I might as well just go,
Yeah, right. You know, goes to that desire that my, you know, of the heart can just, we'll just put it in the refrigerator for the rest of my life or something, or the freezer. You know, we will do something like, you know. It's that choosing to play small.
Yeah.
And because of fear of our own greatness.
Our own greatness. And what I just saw in that too was that it seemed like that the choice to do that, to play it small, comes from a place of believing conditioning's version of what all of that is. Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be too hard and too painful if I, quote, fail, as if there is such a thing. And that once we step outside that paradigm completely, then it's not difficult to make that choice, to just go for it, to live in that really big way.
And I'm just... one of the readings we had this week, it just feels like, you know, it's filling the pot drop by drop with good.
Yeah.
You know? And so you end up with a pot full of good at the end. And who knows what that looks like.
Exactly. As you said that, it reminded me of another, I've talked about this before, but a conversation I had with a friend once around global warming. And how she was saying, you know, it strikes her as so funny, the sort of resistance to, like, you know, there's no such thing as global warming. That's not really happening. And so it's like this sense of, oh, gosh, you know, we did all these things to take care of the Earth for nothing. We didn't even have
to. We could have just trashed it.
There was no such thing as global. You know, it's like, there's no downside.
Yeah.
There's no downside here. There's no reason not to do it. Yeah. To come come from that place of love and care. And,
it's just so interesting for me. It's like that. Also, it just comes back to that not wanting to look like a fool. Well, what if I did? That was so foolish of me. I should have, you know,
truly,
I should have not paid attention. I should have, you know, a better place to live than to just be totally foolish and be doing something that, you know, is just inherently good and right.
Yeah, I've always been inspired by people who I project. I watch them give everything they've got. Mm-hmm. And then folk fail. Mm-hmm. I read something recently that talked about both Gandhi and Churchill, Winston Churchill's life, kind of paralleling them. And they, by like average standards, I mean those guys failed over mm-hmm. and over mm-hmm. and big, really, really big. And you know, it was so helpful to see that, to know that. You know, it's another Thomas Edison moment of like, that's what giving everything you got is.
Yeah.
Falling down, getting up.
And as time goes on and history goes on, those failures are just something we do not even know about for the most part.
True.
It's just the whole big picture that is the contribution that was made.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Liz.
Well, I'm so happy to be here at the monastery and having. Well, it's like, there's no place like home.
There's no Dorothy clicking her relations together.
Yeah, in that surrender, Dorothy.
Yeah.
And so I was out in the conditioned world yesterday, and I was slightly bombarded it's just incredibly overwhelming to go from this environment just into town.
it doesn't stop out there while we're here.
I got my recorder out. I had some recordings, especially of like the creek and the birds in the morning and the riotous frogs at night. And I listened to that and ate a whole bag of totopos. And then I walked into town, and I bought a little painted mug. And as I was leaving, the woman said, "Oh, wait a minute! I have something for you." And she says, "Here," and she handed me. She said, "Here's your certificate of authenticity." So I was like, "All right, it's working!" and then I went back to Sherry's blog, and I was struck by her description of innocent authenticity. Innocent. And that just feels so wonderful to me, because authenticity, it has that authority ring to it, you know, kind of like that. But when I got that, it's like, oh, how sweet, innocent. Just held that close and dear, and happy to be here now.
Mm. So just holding that innocent authenticity close, and that made a big difference for you to add that descriptive word innocent to authenticity.
So I'm going to put that on the card too.
So you've got your certificate of innocent authenticity yesterday. Which is kind of interesting, you know. Here you are out in the middle of the conditioned world, and you were handed your certificate.
Oh, man, you just got
me. Life is full of surprises.
Yes,
let's see. Not sure exactly what I want to share, but I was. I'm doing the retreat at the end of the Transcending Resistance mm-hmm. book right now, and I must confess I haven't even gotten through the book, but I've jumped ahead to the end because it just the retreat sounded so fun. And the place
I think
that
it's a book that's not it's not having you don't have to do it in a particular order,
kind of like awareness practice in general.
Yeah.
yeah. And so much has been coming up. I mean, the retreat we just did was just so incredibly inspiring. And I just, you know, I expressed this the other day, but on a really, like, emotional level, like, gratitude level kind of thing, just so moving. Like, the depth of sincerity, I think, that I was hearing from everybody. And so I just, all these ideas were coming to me. One of the big things that was coming up was this notion of participation and how basically I've lived a life of, and I could really relate to the conversation about, like, hiding out and staying small and staying on the sidelines, and then sneaking around trying to get the needs met in ways that, of course, were never, not only weren't going to meet the needs, but we're giving the exact opposite. We're, like, reinforcing the smallness, the hiding out, and so the point in the, or the place in the transisting, transcending resistance retreat that I was looking at today, there was the sieve, the filling, the sieve
yes,
with water. And you know, how the teacher takes it down and throws it into the ocean or whatever. And it was just so perfect because it's like, it's the exact opposite of the survival strategy. You know, the survival strategy is to remain the ego I, kind of hidden out from life, but then like totally focused on awareness practice, but not and like trying to be part of life. But doing it from like David. You know, like, you know, her.
Right.
Like, I'm over here on this rock and I'm special and I'm different. And, you know, this is the I in quotes kind of thing. But it's, and, you know, I've got to do all these things to get people to notice me or to like me or to keep my autonomy because I've got to survive. Mm-hmm. And yet there's this, I was looking at it in this place of there is a part, and I'm suspecting, you know, it's like the heart or kind of however we would say that, who's just desperate to join in. I mean, you know, who just wants to play and like be part of the gang and like but he's really trapped out of it. Like, you know, he's really, and so I was exploring it a little bit last night, and I never came to anything in particular, although there's one thing, and that is I was taking it back to childhood, and I remember being quite young, and I remember every time that something would come to me, like I would see something about life, or like I would have an understanding of life that didn't fit with like the big people, every time that I would speak up or attempt to say it, man, like my dad would just destroy me in front of everybody kind of thing. And it was, I mean, it was so humiliating. It was just, and it was crushing. I mean, it was like that place of, you know, it's almost like exactly the experience I have now. I have this expansive experience of life, the wonderment of life, and then ego right there on its heels to just crush the human being with some story, you know, some kind of survival thing, whatever. And so, I don't know exactly where I'm going with it, but it was just so interesting to see that really that, I don't want to say that that has to be overcome, because then it sounds like it's a competition and I'm focused on overcoming something that's illusory, and, you know, that. And yet, it's that place of acknowledgement that a real desire is growing to not live in that survival strategy.
Mm-hmm. Because it sounds like an awareness of that it's not working.
Yeah. Yeah.
At all.
At all. Like, really not working.
I had a couple images come up. First, you talked about the sieve, and it's like, David is the sieve, and he's, you know, trying to get awareness practice, and it's just, you know, it's just running on through, and we're like, what is going on, you know? It's just feeling totally isolated instead of just woohoo! You
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
You
exactly.
Know?
Where's
jumping
the
into life and just, you know,
right,
and being filled with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great the way you said that about the sieve, because I get this sense of kind of the, what was dropping in was yesterday as well, was this thing of like, there's an I who is put in charge of kind of waking up and ending suffering. He's constantly failing. He's told he needs to work even harder at it. And he's just told to feel bad. He's made to feel bad all the time. And he's just shoveling that water into the sieve over and over. And of course, within that paradigm, it's never going to work.
And I mean, it's just exhausting to even hear about it.
I know.
You know. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's madness in a way. And so there was a couple things with it. One was that there was a lot of compassion for, not necessarily the survival strategy, but the identity who's kind of buried underneath mm-hmm. it, the one who is a child, who I really got in touch with over the last couple weeks, who I think was really in touch with life. You know, I think he really had a perception or an understanding, like most kids, I think, in the world, kind of thing. Probably all kids, actually, all of us at some stage. And recognizing that, like, there's a lot of compassion for him and the experience that he went through. You know, I'm sure everybody has their kind of version of how it got crushed out of them or how it got
swallowed. I'm just so reminded of the blog, Sherry's recent blog. And I think that we, you know, we all read that during the retreat, but what you're describing is just, I mean, she describes that in the blog.
Oh, okay. Exactly, like the, I care, I don't care.
How we come in authentically, you know, we know what's right, we know, and just that conditioned system just keep, you know, just pummels us until we acquiesce.
Yes.
And go over to that condition.
Yes.
And the opportunity is, you know, to look at that conditioning and follow it back and actually discover what is there authentically.
What's authentic? That's so it. I mean, what you just said right there, I mean, that feels like it's so it. And I think the bit that tied in with the retreat we just went through was actually getting it that there is a really clear way to kind of map and look at each one of these kind of survival strategies. Like, I just love that idea that, like, the identity and the kind of survival strategy, the process that the identity is engaged in, whatever, that those two things aren't separate. That, like, they're kind of all one and the same. Mm-hmm. And to just, that there's a possibility to step outside of that altogether.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that just, like, and to see that, like, the survival strategy only serves to reinforce.
It's more the sieve.
Yeah.
It's not going anywhere. It's never going to lead to
what it's promised.
To peace and to authenticity. And to, it's just going to keep perpetuating that system.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And so so the last kind of piece of it that was really apparent was, and this gets into the kind of, again, the conversation was just coming up, like the Thomas Edison type thing or whatever. You know, instead of like, kind of without having those insights or having kind of all seeing this on a bigger level, there is this really beautiful moment where I could see where conditioning wanted to be like, okay, so now we're going to be authentic, now it's going to be real, and now it's going to, you know, it's like, it's got this whole thing. And there was this other like little opening, was like, okay, sweet, now we get to see all the ways that we're not authentic, that it's, you know, like, it's like getting to see, like, how many times can I fall down? How many times can I be humiliated? How many times can I watch this survival system try and be clever, try and say something, try and hide out, try and be different, only to realize that, yeah, all of the ways that, you know, trying to be David doesn't actually work. I'm actually more likely to have those as opportunities rather than the, like, here's the authentic me. You know, do you know what I mean? Like, there's
sort of like bringing on, and I'd like to see it all.
Yes.
Yeah, instead of the other track, which is following conditioning. Like, okay, now we're going to do this, and, you know, I have this agenda and a goal.
Right.
That's, you know, you're never going to attain, because you're always in the process of trying to attain a goal instead of living in the results of the goal.
Exactly. Yeah, the conditioning's version of it is that the insight, I've seen it all.
Yeah.
So, now can I go back to being me?
Exactly.
You know, it just loops it right back around. Anyway, so it was a perfect, while waiting for my pumpkin bread to heat up this morning, I read The Way of Transformation, and that was it. I mean, that was it right there. It's like, all right, bring it on. You know, like, you know, the annihilation or whatever it is kind of thing is I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say, like, I'm stoked about it. You know, it's not like I'm sitting up at night, like, all right, you know, surf's off. You know, but there is at least a little bit of freedom to acknowledge, like, you know, I don't know. Like, you know, so anyway.
Ego eye is never going to be stoked about it. The Way of Transformation is a great reading for students, I think, to touch in on after this week's readings. And,
perfect.
To just be, remember, it's not about going to feel comfortable, it's not about, you know, having this nice little warm, safe cocoon. It's like, bring it on. I want to see all of those ways that I'm kept separate from life.
And that's such a big piece. I'll stop here, but that's such a big piece of it, because the survival system, a part of staying small is that comfortable cocoon. Yeah. It's that place of how small can we lock, you know, right. a prison can we lock a human in.
Right.
So, yeah.
I'll just stay here in this nice little tiny air-conditioned room. Never have to confront anything. But, you know, the heart withers.
Yeah, exactly, yes. Yeah.
And eventually it just pushes us out, so
yeah,
it's a good thing.
Thank you.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about this for a long time, but I love the Olympic analogy. For practice, the Winter Olympics came to my town, and I volunteered. And it was very, very fun, and I didn't realize how much I was projecting on the athletes and the coaches. I was at a venue that would have a lot of athletes and coaches on it, and I was just so inspired that they sort of had their own little privileged environment going on, because they have this athlete's creed which they sort of follow, and I was always inspired by I was talking about earlier, just the odds of just making an Olympic team, let alone, you know, on that. And it's really amazing because it's only every 4 years, and usually the event is only on one day. So can you put that performance together every 4 years on one day? And I heard Sherry talk about it once, about, she said, we've probably never seen the best figure skaters in the world. Because on that given day, maybe, the system took over and they just, you know, crushed their dreams on that very spot. Projecting all that, the passion and desire I've heard it said this way, that when one attains their personal best, that's really what the coaches and the athletes are focusing on, is their personal best. Like, it is competition, but it's really with oneself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that personal best, because that's what I feel like we're doing in practice, wherever we are.
Yeah.
We're all just doing our best.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah. Personal best. I mean, actually, there's nothing else, is there?
No.
I mean, what else? You know, you can't do the neighbor's best. Even though we try. I mean, it's interesting. We look at other folks and we compare,
right.
We judge, and
yes.
Then we think, well, okay, I'm going to try and be like that. And that is, in essence, trying to be the neighbor's best.
It is.
And it just never, ever goes anywhere.
Never
good.
Yeah, and that image of the Olympic Village where borders dissolve. You know, I know that athletes all come from certain countries and blah, blah, but it's just, you know, it's sort of like nationalities dissolve in the sense that the ego eye dissolves, and my nationality is not that important anymore. It's just, I'm just an athlete, and I'm just here because I have a passion and desire to fulfill a dream that started probably way, way as a small child. And all the support it takes, as we take in Salonga, you hear about these athletes, you know, you hear about these parents driving their kids to hockey at 4 a.m. to the rink, you know, just the sacrifices that some of them have done for each other, you know, how we've supported each other. I can just only project, as I did, to get to retreats and now being here, folks that get here on retreat and folks that make that phone call for the first time over there, you can just hear them, like, oh, this is my first call. And I mean, it's like, wow, I remember my first call, you know, when you're unmuted, you know, to care where that goes. You know, you want to hang up immediately. Yeah. I hear a lot of dead air, and I'm going, did they hang up? Is that a hang up? You know? Because we hear a lot of the next call. Please introduce yourself, and they're not there.
Yeah.
We don't know what happened, where they went. So, yeah, the Olympic analogy is really inspiring. And yeah, it's so interesting. So many times in group, I'll just have someone jump in and someone will talk about it. And I, too, the privilege environment dropped in this morning in a really big way. Just seeing how, at the end of this retreat, just, I just don't think any of this would be possible without the privilege environment. I don't think we can see the things we're seeing. I don't think it's possible to follow the teachings the way Buddha laid it out and by the way our guides and sages are presenting to us. I just don't see the possibilities without the privileged environment, allowing this inward focus and seeing how it all works. Because externally, that's, someone just shared about it out there in that conditioned world. None of this is supported. None whatsoever. Well, maybe the little authenticity certificate for the mob, you know, there's little glimpses of it out there, which the person shared about. I am just so deeply, deeply grateful that we have this perfect environment to practice with.
It's definitely a rare jewel.
It is.
In the world. And it's good to see what it provides for us and what it supports.
Yeah.
And I think that, and just speaking from my own experience, that, you know, when you start to practice, it may not be that clear.
Yeah.
And then as practice continues and deepens, its value becomes much clearer, and our gratitude grows for it.
Yeah, and our gratitude grows for it, and it becomes clearer and clearer the more we go out and come back.
Right.
And go, wow, how do I take it out there, and how do I maintain it if I go out there? Mm-hmm. That is a huge.
And how do I? Yeah, and how do I keep it with me?
Keep it with me always. And when I come back here, how do I keep it with me? And support and sustain that practice. So,
Karen.
Oh, I was going to talk about something else, but that something came up in that conversation about the privileged environment. But first of all, I just want to say that what dropped in this morning. For me was just really seeing how vital this work is. Like, it just has to be here. And, you know, all of this and all the people that make it possible. And it reminds me of that, those, somewhere there's a group of monks that meditate around the clock so that the earth will keep spinning on its axis.
Mm-hmm.
And or axis, and it feels that vital to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like
this practice keeps the earth in orbit, so to speak, metaphorically.
It puts so much goodness into the world.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels vital to life that it be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when I'm not here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably not an hour of my day that I'm not touching in with knowing this is here,
mm-hmm.
somehow touching in with practice, and knowing that there are a group of monks here practicing, to me is like knowing that there's a group of monks meditating to keep the axis spinning, or the earth spinning on its axis. That's what it looks like to me.
And how vital it is for each of us to nurture our own practice, so to speak, to keep our world on an axis, and to see the value of that and how that ripples out.
I'm looking at that, the privileged environment, because I spend 99% of my life out in the world, or probably more than that. And I'm just wondering, as I'm listening to people, is the privileged environment just a breath away? Isn't there, I'm just sort of looking at that,
mm-hmm.
isn't there, is it?
go on.
That's what it looks like to me. Uh-huh. First thing I'm out there, but it feels like that's my experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can just be with my
friend. A wonderful exploration.
Yeah.
To look at all the ways I can be in the privileged environment. What is it to be in a privileged environment? Is it the circumstances I find myself in, or is it something else? Is it being with the breath?
Yeah, it can't be the circumstances because it just can't be. Pretty hands on, and But just, you know, that.
Not the competition part,
no,
but just
no.
the physical.
Yeah. Yeah, just the how grounding that is,
mm-hmm.
and how grounding that is here, and how grounding that is at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to or in my work, or just picking up a rake, you know, or going out to water, whatever those things are, how they, you know, just feels.
It really is. It's much like coming back to the breath. It's, you know, it's all, it all takes place here. To have that kind of contact, physical contact, and just that place of being with it.
Conversation this morning is helping me put together a couple of things that I was looking at. And one just came up in the last day or so when I heard an external person say, what if I could just go and have fun?
What if I could just go and have fun?
Yeah. And I just, hearing that just went right to my own heart. It was like, oh.
So you heard a person in the environment. This wasn't
this
just
wasn't
an inner
in
conversation.
No, it was an external person that said it. And it was just resonant. I was just like, oh my God.
I could have said that.
What if I could, what if that's all life is about? What if I could just show up and have fun?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a revelation, because it's just, you know, there's so much other stuff about showing up other than just having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I just, it was so, yeah, it was so moving to me. It really was. And so the thing that I'm relating that to, the exercise in the back of the Transcending Resistance book that I'm currently on is the one about the practice of being wholehearted and taking life on with two hands and, you know, really, if you're going to do it fully. And so I had an experience with a work task recently with that involved some dirt and a tool, and I was having the experience of, you know, kind of hacking away at it with my one hand and getting very frustrated and not getting the result that I was trying to get, and not actually having a good time at that moment.
No fun.
Yeah, at that moment. And you know, was sort of starting to feel kind of defeated by it, and I took a little break and had a little conversation with whoever was there, and you know, sort of looked at, you know, is it really so that I am someone who can't do this? You know, is it really so that this is hard? Is it really so that this is no fun? Is it really so that I hate this? You know, and what was very clear was, no, I'm someone who can do this. This is not that hard. I don't hate it. It's actually kind of fun. And so I went back to it with both hands. I literally started using both hands and the different body posture and really attacking it. And it was so much fun.
Wow, it sounds like giving it 100%.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and if you'd asked me on one hand, I mean, I was hot, I was dirty, and, you know, I could have been miserable. But I wasn't, and it's just like, and it's that kind of, it's like that's related to what if I could just go and have fun, you know? And it's counterintuitive to conditioning, because conditioning says the way to have fun is to kind of, you know, get it done with the least amount of effort and, you know, don't stay safe and don't put yourself out. And
don't get dirty.
Don't get dirty, yeah. Don't get hot, don't get sweaty. You know, but to engage life fully with whatever I'm doing, no matter what's going on, is exactly showing up and having fun.
Sounds like just going and taking a break,
mm-hmm.
stepping aside from it, asking a few questions. It also seems like there was an opportunity maybe to just identify
it, absolutely.
And to have someone else come back,
absolutely.
Someone different to come back
yeah.
and with the job, who's
yes.
willing to have fun and
yes.
to just jump in.
Absolutely, and that's so been my experience lately, that the you know, I'm really catching on that as soon as I am experiencing that any kind of don't want to, don't like it, I'm right, they're wrong, any of those familiar stories, that's a clue. That's feedback.
Yes.
That says
that there's take an identity a break, there that's trying to be maintained.
It's time to take a break and have a conversation. And you know, every time I do, it's just, you know, it's just, it's, you know, it's mentoring, and it's what I'm getting, seeing more is that it's not necessarily mentoring a small part of me, because I don't think that resistance is a small part of me. It's just conditioning. It's just the familiar, this is how we make our miserable story. So the conversation isn't about, you know, helping someone along. The conversation is about doing an end run really around conditioning and saying, wait a minute, what's the story here, folks? Oh no, that's a story. What's really so? All right. I'm a capable person who's present in life and knows how to do this and can show up, and let's go back and get to it.
Wow, that's really, really important.
Yeah, it is really, really important.
Because, you know, it's what we've worked on this week, you know, when you're caught in that condition or that I system of the identity, it's never going to go any place. It's never going to lead to the result that's desired.
No, it's going to reinforce the identity.
It all reinforces it. I had a image of, like, you know, you're running down the whole game, running down the football field or something, and then all of a sudden you just like, turn to the right.
I got to all point around.
Yeah, just go over and have your own huddle and let them all go, and yeah, come back, and everybody's away from the goal, and then you can just make the goal.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, it's just so. It's so helpful to see that that full participation really is going and having fun.
Truly. Anything done with 100% has got to be fun.
Because
there's nothing left over there to be we're there in the corner just, you know, going at it. How it's not working. There's no room for that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Justin.
So it's a very helpful conversation. So what I'm looking at as people are talking is I've had some really important information this past week about how things work. And now it's the living part.
That's always the crucial point, isn't it?
Because what the experiences that I had over the week are not intellectual experiences. It's not really theoretical, although it's kind of theoretical. It's not really. There were experiences of how it works in kind of most possible way like that, and yet it is. This life goes on. You know, it continues. It's, you know, there's this day, then another day, then another day. And all of that has to be lived into. And, you know, I'm seeing, as easy to predict, machine mind making it dualistic, making content related, all the things that it does. And that's what I kind of came in with a little bit. And so, you know, as I'm hearing people talking, what I'm seeing is that it's an unfolding process. Mm-hmm. It's not the practice of, we're not practicing trying to get resistance, trying to achieve some goal, even if goal is like being suffering. It's a process of being suffering. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is going to be the old, you know, 10,000 ways that doesn't work. But even that doesn't really make sense, because there's no system that's working. It's just like we just said, you're showing up, participating, engaging in this, paying attention, and trusting that whatever will be helpful will be offered.
It's showing up, engaging, and participating, and trusting in life, that whatever is needed is going to be there in the next moment. Mm-hmm. And it's not a theoretical knowledge, it's not a goal-oriented project. It's just a process of unfolding, or
a process of unfolding. Yeah, I mean, that's what I feel like we're trying to learn. It's trying to learn being in or with the process of life as it unfolds.
Well, there's just so much gentleness in that. Mm-hmm. When you say that, I mean, just energetically, how different than being goal-oriented.
Yeah. That's a good word for it. I can move to gentleness. Because, part of what's going on is, I think you're trying to get in the driver's seat and make it, like a contest. It's painful.
It is.
I mean, actually, not just been experiencing anything painful, because it hasn't really happened. But I can feel, I know how painful that is when I'm involved with that, and I can just feel it. I mean, there's still a lot of room, but it's just trying to stick its other little fingers in there and do things.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too, because it felt like it wasn't just this last week, but it even previously. I've been having these experiences that have been very, really helping me, because I've moved in the direction that I can see that I need to go. I can't say what it is in a way that I can get there. But as it happens, I can say, oh yeah, this is coming exactly where it needs to. And it's been a process of life unfolding. It hasn't been something that I created at all or had any idea about until it happened. And so, what's the point of doing a different process now based on that information? It doesn't make any sense. Because it's obviously is doing something on its own. And there's no reason to think that it won't continue. It seems like that's just what happens. Why would I try to get outside of that and have some influence on it in a way that had all these, it's just all these egotistical, that's the right word, agendas, whether it might be the right person, be good, not be bad, all those things.
It's that same little, it's getting its fingers in it, the ego is, mm-hmm. in the same way the conditioning wants to get its fingers in the experience you've had of. It's not what happened this weekend, what arose, and just, feeling that, being changed by that experience. And you can see the conditions kind of working around the edges. Mm-hmm. And also, it's just, as you were talking too, it's just reminded of just the importance of talking in group and getting guidance. To just keep that vision and keep checking in and to keep making sure that conditioning has gotten its slimy little fingers in there, and it's just something that has just been so precious, it sounds like, to the being. And
it is. Well, that's my change of behavior, actually. Mm-hmm. It's been going for a good while now. That is a big part of our practice, is communicating, expressing, participating. And for me personally, it's the only way out.
The only way out
of this effort. Because it's on my own, it's just going to continue going out and going around the same pool.
I can guarantee it's going to go. Mm-hmm. We know the direction it'll go.
Yeah. And we get nothing I saw over here. That's right. Well, just that even if condition gets its fingers in, that's probably too.
That's great. I'm glad you mentioned that. It can't go awry.
That's just part of the process.
Yeah. So, okay, great. Thank you all.